North Georgia Business Radio presents the best of Business Radio X. Business Radio X serves as the voice of business in cities around the country, and every day Business Radio X lets you hear from business leaders, executives, managers, and business owners, allowing them to share their stories of success. I'm Mike Salmon, and today on the show, we're going to share some of the conversations heard recently in our Business Radio X studio in Gwinnett County. Today, you'll hear from Georgia's Lieutenant Governor on his plans for the state and how his experience as a former baseball player inspires him. Also, things you never knew about the trucking industry and how technology is transforming today's truckers. And later on, news about a 25-year reunion and celebration for a former Atlanta hockey team that won it all in 1994. But up first, two well-known local college football stars that are now scoring big in the business world. Former Auburn running back Ronnie Brown and former Georgia linebacker Rennie Curran stopped by the studio recently to talk business on Marketing Matters with hosts Ryan Sowers and Jane Bishop.
Ronnie, I believe you were number one first-round draft pick, played about 10 years in the NFL from Auburn Tigers, right? But you went to Miami, if I'm right.
Yeah, so I went to Auburn, and then I was drafted to Miami by Nick Saban. So it was weird. Like, Auburn guy being drafted
by that's the year Saban. He was down there. Okay, yeah, so here's my question to start. What drives both of you? I mean, you know, what is your drive? I mean, obviously it's professional athletes and collegiate athletes, all the stuff you've had to do. Are there things that you learned that you're so glad you learned that are helping you in your professional career?
You know, for me, it's been cumulative. You know, I obviously started out younger. I had an older brother that kind of pushed me, encouraged me to play sports. So, you know, from the competitive side of it, you know, I'm pretty competitive. I like to win, but I hate to lose more than I like to win. So that's number one. But then I'm a self-motivated person. You know, to some degree, I think I have a fear of failure because I always want to be successful. And, you know, I want to take on new things, take on new challenges. Obviously, it's an opportunity to learn. So, you know, those are a few key things that, you know, that drive me, along with having people around you that believe in you. Then that kind of adds fuel to the fire, because you want to be successful when you know you have supportive people that are behind you.
How about you, Ronnie?
Yeah, so for me, I mean, it starts with the foundation of my parents. Both of them are Liberian immigrants who came to this country in the 80s, and they had that, you know, that mindset of just coming here, not really having much, but making the most out of what they have. And so, knowing that my mom came here to Emory, got her master's without even knowing her way around, my dad became an entrepreneur and just grinded, and seeing the sacrifices that they made, I mean, that's something that's the biggest part of my life. And I had no excuses growing up. You know, growing up in Gwinnett, going to Brookwood House High School, that's where it really started. I was very, very self-motivated, as Ronnie said as well. And then outside of that, my faith was a big part of what drove me, just knowing that God gave me these gifts and I wasn't going to let it go to waste, because I knew if I did that, I was either going to lose it or he's going to give it to somebody else.
You both mentioned self-motivated. Yeah. Obviously, that's a key driver for both of you. So elaborate on that for the audience a little bit.
Right. So when I think of self-motivation, I think about the fact that when it came to the game, I didn't need a coach to yell at me. I didn't need my parents. You know, most of the time they're working. I knew that if I were to be successful, it was going to come down to my mindset and my discipline and my ability to get out, even when I don't feel like it. And so that's something that's been a recurring theme now that I'm in entrepreneurship. So self-motivation, I believe, just understanding that it starts with you and nobody else, and not having to have those external factors that motivate you.
Oh, that's huge.
Right. And for me, it was, you know, kind of like Rennie said, the same thing, you know, the self-motivation. You know, in my mind, I've always had the mentality of you have to be great at the things that don't take talent. Obviously, that's being on time, you know, knowing what to do when you get there. And then you could always learn how to do it, especially like in the sports world. You know, you're always going to have a coach. You're always going to have someone to tell you how to do it.
Right.
But then, you know, there has to be a why within inside of you. And then once you know your why, and then the rest of it takes care of itself. You know,
that's
when you're self-motivated, you figure it out. You know what you're doing. You know how to do it. But at the same time, all the other things that come along with being a professional or, you know, an athlete, you have to be willing to accept, you know, challenges and face those challenges straightforward. You know, and there was a lot of things that I learned through sport that applied to business world. You know, like I said, number one, the standard is the standard. You know, and then two, being great at the things that don't take talent. You know, I can always be on time to work. you know, I can always do the things necessarily, treat people the right way, all of these things. And then outside of that, from work ethic standpoint, you know, I just feel like you're not going to outwork me. There's no excuse for that.
I think I've heard Randy say that same thing.
That's right. A little challenge.
That's
there.
No, it's awesome.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You know, and it's I think you approach things that way. One, I think it's from a competitive nature. A lot of athletes, you just don't want to lose. But then also knowing, you know, to be successful, it takes a lot of work. There's a lot of challenges. But even throughout sport, you learn a lot about yourself that you may not have known, because there are limits and thresholds that you have to go through, you know, whether it's in camp or training camps or all these things in the summer. And, you know, you have to be willing to do things that other people aren't willing to do.
And so there's no shortcut in grinding it, right?
Oh, yeah. No, without a doubt. And that's one of the things that I think about playing my position at linebacker, because there was so much time, and Ronnie can attest to this as well, but we spent so much time in the film room, breaking down plays, understanding tendencies, understanding statistics. Like, I thought I was bad at math until I realized, like, we spent so many hours studying, you know, all these things. And so I'm a master at understanding, you know, tendencies, being able to anticipate the next move of my competitors. Like, all those things translate into business. If you're not able to measure, you know, just the reps and the success and why things are working the right way, especially in sales, understanding your process, you're going to eventually fail, or you're going to be moving in the right direction, but you're not going to understand why. So all those things, you know, translate and help you just to improve the performance.
So when you're working with your clients or working with groups now on their personal development, how do you help them get that? One of my former lives, I did some coaching at two small colleges, certainly not at the level you guys play, but understand the dynamics of athletics and discipline.
Right.
You can't challenge them by running laps or whatever if they don't get it.
Yeah.
So how do you transfer that as you're working with your clients in personal development?
So it always starts, I believe, with awareness. So starting with where you're at right now, looking yourself in the mirror, doing a self-evaluation. Most people don't even understand, you know, what their things like, what their values are and what their vision is. Like, starting from the base of just, where am I at now? What's working? What's not working? Asking powerful questions to get them to really evaluate and break their own sales down. And then even from the standpoint of, what am I doing right? Why am I winning? Why am I closing sales?
Yes.
And sometimes people don't even know that.
Yeah. They don't understand that. It's kind of that hit or miss, you know, kind of thing. You just, because you get into the daily grind of just going through the motions and trying to survive. And so breaking them out of that and getting them to really evaluate themselves is where it starts for me. And then from there, just giving them principles and key metrics to focus on, getting them to break down their days, you know, scheduling their days, understanding, where am I spending the majority of my time? Where are my priorities at? Where do I eventually want to be? Setting those benchmarks. I do a lot.
That's huge. That whole self-awareness key, Ryan. Yeah. You know the value of that.
Well, do you have that, Ronnie, with some of your clients, or when you're starting to talk to people, sometimes they don't even know what they want to achieve financially?
Yeah, sure. And I think that's the central factor that a lot of people, you know, possess, is in terms of the self-reflection, or even knowing what it is you want to accomplish. Like, what are your goals? Like, have you self-reflected? Right. You really know what you want to achieve? Like, and then, you know, coming at a plan to, okay, how do we get to that point? But, you know, first and foremost, it starts with having an understanding of what you want to accomplish and having your goal in mind, and then realizing what it takes. Okay, now we have a plan in place. Now what actions do we need to take? And every action that we do make has to align with what our goals are, you know? And I think a lot of times, you know, you'll see people there after a situation's occurred, they'll wonder, how did I get here? But, you know, once you reflect and you're honest with yourself about the actions and, you know, decisions that you made, then it makes perfect sense, you know? And I think that's the key, like, even with military and sports alike, you know, I think just going into it, having a plan, and then you go to the game or you go to whatever it is, the challenge, and then you debrief on how everything went.
Sure.
You know, and having an understanding, but also, you know, leaving your pride at the door and being like, you know what, this is an opportunity to either, you know, there's a lesson or a blessing in pretty much every challenge that we have. And I think as long as we're mentally open to trying to learn what that lesson or blessing is, then there's something that we can learn from it, and now we can grow. And I think that's the ultimate thing, you know, is all of us growing.
It's a continual growth. I tell people, there is no real failure if you learn from it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But too many people fail, and they just don't have a clue of how to apply it to get better. There's nothing wrong with failing. You're going to fail to succeed, right?
Well, that's how we learn. And as a running back, you were looking for the clear vision to see your path to avoid the linebackers, you know, like Rennie. So I'm just curious how you transfer those experiences that you've learned into the business the financial business that you're involved in now?
Understanding that success is when preparation meets opportunity. And, you know, I think...
Tweetable moment.
Yeah, yes. Like the preparation moment is the key. Like, I got to watch film on Rennie all week. It's not just a Saturday thing. Like, I got to see his tendencies. I got to understand what he's doing, what his approach is, you know, how he likes to attack, and then try to use that to my advantage or try to make it his disadvantage. So understanding that it's not just today. It's a, you know, it's an extended effort that's been put into it. There's a lot of training. Obviously, I still have to work out. I got to be accountable for, you know, my abilities. But then at the same time, I have to have an understanding of what it is that he's going to be able to do. And once I understand, you know, what my strengths and weaknesses are, and now I can analyze him and understand how I can use that to the best of my ability, now there's opportunity to be successful. But if I don't do that, I don't put anything in from Monday through Friday, then Saturday is not going to be a success.
If somebody comes in, they're just faster, bigger, stronger. I can't focus on that, right? Yeah. I've got to focus on what I can do, my God-given abilities, the best I can do them.
I mean, that was a big part of, you know, my rise was understanding the skills, gifts and talents that I possessed that separated me, because I was a guy who's labeled as undersized. So I was not supposed to play at Georgia, wasn't supposed to play in the NFL, but I understood that I had those intangibles that Ronnie talked about. Also, the preparation was huge, the anticipation. So I tried to maximize every single asset that I could, whether it was technique, stature, in terms of having leverage. I mean, every single thing. And that, I believe, applies to businesses, especially if you're a small business, understanding how you can compete with the bigger corporates. How do you separate yourself? And for me, like, as opposed to Ronnie, he already went in knowing kind of what the play was. Mine was a lot of
reacting to
being proactive.
You're being like the other side of the chessboard.
Yeah, so it's like the other side. And so I'm having to anticipate. I'm having to look at, okay, how is this lineman leaning? What way is he looking at before the play starts? So it gave me every little, you know, key that I could have to give me like that understanding of what they were doing before it actually happened.
And that's former football stars Ronnie Brown and Rennie Curran on Marketing Matters on Business Radio X. To hear the entire interview, visit businessradiox.com, click on the Gwinnett Studio, and then select Marketing Matters. Coming up next, a visit with Jeff Duncan and how his days as a baseball player have influenced his job as Georgia's lieutenant governor. And later, the latest on a 25-year reunion for an Atlanta championship sports team. More of North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X after this. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. Jeff Duncan had dreams to be a Major League Baseball pitcher before injuries sidelined those plans. But now, as Georgia's lieutenant governor, Duncan still uses his days on the diamond to help guide his career working at the state capitol. The former ball player and business owner was a guest this week on Leader Dialogue on Business Radio X.
What is the job of the lieutenant governor?
Great question, and so I'm only seven months into it, so we're still trying to figure it out ourselves. The Constitution says this, that the lieutenant governor is the president of the Senate, and so in Georgia, obviously, we have a 40 legislative day session, which usually spans about 3 months, and so you're the president of the Senate. Lots of important things to do there, to name committees, to pick chairs, and work with the Senate members to really work with the flow of legislation and whatnot. So it really puts you in a strong, strong position. Outside of session, the Constitution speaks very little as to what the role of lieutenant governor is. And so really what we're trying to do is to really be supportive of the governor's initiatives. Brian Kemp has been a great partner, but really try to also be a business ambassador and be an overall ambassador for the state of Georgia itself. Traveling the state after session ended and being able to talk about, you know, the 22 health care bills we passed and about the teacher pay raises and all these great things we did, just continuing to remind 11 million Georgians of the hard work that's going on up at the Capitol.
Talk to us a little bit about some of the sort of top issues that you guys are having to address that the governor's initiatives are going after.
I think for me, there's three prime areas that I've been focused in on. One is education. You know, the greatest gift we can give a child is a quality K-12 education, and it just pays so many dividends, even into the healthcare spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. If we properly educate kids, they're able to understand more about themselves and their communities. Then we talk about healthcare, right? There's a continued momentum. We're at this intersection in healthcare where, you know, technology is going to need to play a vital role. The technology has to be consumer friendly. It's got to be realistic. But ultimately, I think we have to look at healthcare knowing that all 11 million Georgians agree on two things. We need more affordable and better access to healthcare. The third part, and this is probably the biggest goal I've ever set professionally, is I want Georgia to be the technology capital of the East Coast. That's really my laser focus on economic development. And to do that, everything has to really be firing on all cylinders. But I think it's a great initiative to go towards. And quite honestly, every business in Georgia, and quite honestly, the world, is a technology company. Right. Whether they're mining data or looking for social media needs, or your Delta or Coca-Cola or any healthcare company.
Mm-hmm. It's an accelerator.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you have to have it, actually, to be able to be successful.
Yep, that's right. I think history's going to look back on this period of time and see the technological advancements we've had over a 20 or 30-year period of time to be as important as the invention of the wheel.
Yeah, totally agree. How does your experience as a professional baseball player influence and essentially impact how you're functioning as a lieutenant governor?
I learned a lot of life lessons playing baseball, right? The ability to chase a dream and find incremental success in that, you know, every day, you know, just staying alive in the game and just, you know, working your way through it. And also the value of hard work and understanding how that translates to every phase of our lives, whether it be in a marriage and raising mm-hmm. kids, a job, mm-hmm. Even retirement, the value of hard work and being able to experience that. But for me, when you're in the minor leagues, you know, nobody really cares that you got a trophy at the end of the year, right? I've played in a couple of those championships or the playoffs, and it's really miserable, right? I mean, you've been making a couple $1,000s a month. You've been on the road for 7 months, and now they tell you you got to spend 2 more weeks to win a $5 watch or a $50 members only jacket or something.
Right.
But what you learn is the success is from inning to inning or from game to game. And
right.
so as the less talented, and I consider myself on the low end of the talent pool, I had to compete literally from pitch to pitch. And I mm-hmm. didn't recognize that. You know, I'm 44 years old now. I realize now that. And I've translated that into as a small business owner mm-hmm. and winning every day. And how do you win today? Well, today I need to cut I got to cut my budget today.
Right.
Or tomorrow I need to go find 2 new customers.
That's so true.
And in state government, too. And look, I'm new. I barely know where the bathrooms are at the Capitol at this point.
That's really hard. He's not making a joke. It's really hard.
Yeah, that's right. You need a map.
You just keep making rights.
But,
or lefts.
You know, you've got to value. What is a successful day for lieutenant governor right now? You know, is it
right.
5 conversations with senators and 2 speeches and 3 media interviews? Every day changes. But finding incremental success and the value of that translates all across the spectrum. But I learned more from baseball than any other spot in my life.
So is it fair to summarize your focus is on today, you understand what the priorities are, you execute against that, you anticipate potential challenges tomorrow, but you can't solve tomorrow's problems today?
Yeah, focus on the journey and not the trophy. And the journey changes every day. It doesn't mean that you lose focus on where the end game is, where the end goal is.
Right.
Right. If you want to solve poverty or you want to better educate kids or you want to create economic development opportunities, that's out there. But if I just simply wake up in the morning and say, we want to better educate K-12, okay? That's great. I'm going to be frustrated because what is truly success? It's every day. Well, how are we going to do that? Well, we're going to execute a modernization. We're going to figure out ways to remind parents and guardians that the education of their child is meant to be a true partnership, right? It's not meant to be a drop-off and pick-up program. How can we deploy more technology in the classroom to allow connectivity between teachers and parents? You know, let mom and dad know, or guardian or grandparents know, when Johnny's doing something good, maybe when he's not doing something good. That's the incremental success that we need to have as we move forward.
Right, so just to finish the analogy with baseball then, how did metrics and technology impact your ability to be successful on a game-to-game basis?
I became a student of the game. As my career came forward, I learned that the data wasn't just how I was going to get paid. It was going to be how I could succeed. In the baseball world, you know, there was a binder that sat there. You know, if I spent 6 seasons playing, the first 3, I just looked at this binder that sat on the end of the bench and had no idea what was in it because I never opened it. And then I opened it up.
Right.
I was like, what is this? This is a tendencies chart. This means I can know when this guy hits 85% of the time when he's down 0-2, he swings and misses at a breaking ball. You know, this guy's a 500 hitter on the first pitch, so guess what? He's not getting a fastball down the middle. Right? All of a sudden, I became incrementally better because I became a student of the game. But here's the challenge. You have to want to do that.
Right.
Right? And so that's the adoption rate inside an organization. Right? I can, you know, if we all work on the same goal, it's the secret sauce is getting everybody to work on that and share the vision and have ownership in the end game. And feel like they're valuable to the overall organization.
And that's Georgia's Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan on Leader Dialogue, presented by SOAR Vision Group. To hear the entire interview, visit businessradiox.com, select the Gwinnett Studio, and then select Leader Dialogue. or you can visit leaderdialogue.com/podcast. Coming up next, how technology is changing the trucking industry. And later, an Atlanta championship team is reuniting 25 years after winning it all. North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X continues after this. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X, where we are sharing some of the on-air interviews from our Gwinnett studio from this past week. Throughout Atlanta, you can't get away from the huge tractor trailers that frequent the interstate. To many, large trucks are just a nuisance on the highway, slowing things down. But the trucking industry is vital to our economy. In this interview from the weekly show Travel Safely with Brian Mulligan, special guest Rebecca Brewster with the American Transportation Research Institute shares things you probably never thought about when it comes to the trucking industry.
The research is a broad topic. So what do you guys do on a practical basis? Government research, private sector research, safety? What is it that you guys actually do?
Our focus is research to improve the trucking industry's safety and productivity. So sometimes that covers very specific issues like the impact of the hours of service rules, the rules that govern when drivers can drive and when they sleep. Sometimes it's broader, looking at how we fund transportation infrastructure, because of course the nation's roadways are our workplace in the trucking industry. And so a broader look at what's the most efficient way to fund transportation infrastructure is a topic that ATRI has studied. So some are very specific to the trucking industry and some are much more broad in scope.
We see trucks everywhere. How many trucks are out there and how many miles do you guys actually do?
Well, in our space in the trucking industry, we're talking generally about Class 8 vehicles. Those are the tractor trailers that people think of in the trucking industry. Right. So just under 4 million Class 8 vehicles out on the road.
Wow.
To be specific, 3.68 million Class 8 vehicles out on the road. It's a lot, but when you think about it, Brian, everything that touches our lives lived on some point on a truck, whether it was raw materials going to a manufacturing facilities, whether it was the food we eat, the gasoline we put in our cars, the clothes that we wear, all of those items travel at some point on a truck before they are ultimately delivered to us through a gas station or a grocery store or a department store. And so as consumer demand goes up, so does the demand for trucking. And one point I want to bring out that people don't really realize is that you see some of the big trucking companies, and you reference, you know, there are a lot of big trucking companies, and there are, but nearly 92% of the trucking companies out there operate six or fewer trucks. So when you talk about a mom and pop industry, we really are. We are a lot of small business people.
You know, driver fatigue, I understand, is a big cause of or contributor to accidents. Are they seeing an improvement in accident rates with less driver fatigue? How's that research looking?
Fatigue is a small contributor to truck-involved crashes. They are oftentimes, when we do see fatigue-involved crashes, they are crashes that involve a truck driver going off the road on a rural route.
A single vehicle crash.
But overall, the percentage of truck-involved crashes that have fatigue as a contributing cause is very low. Okay. Certainly, it is an issue that the industry takes very seriously. And when you think about the task of driving a truck, especially long haul, particularly if you're out west, long stretches of monotonous road, you can imagine how it might become fatiguing. And so that's why we have hours of service rules that mandate how long a driver can drive and be behind the wheel, and then how long they must take a rest before that clock starts over again.
Are you seeing driver assistant systems, lane keeping, those kind of systems penetrating the trucking industry?
Absolutely. The trucking industry invests about $9.5 billion annually in safety technology because it sees the value and the return on investment of those technologies. So everything from lane keeping assist, collision mitigation systems, forward facing and driver facing cameras are really getting a lot of penetration in the industry now.
Oh, wow.
As a great way, because so often, Brian, the research shows that in truck and car involved crashes, more often than not, the crash is caused by some action on the part of the car drivers. Car drivers do not really understand how to safely drive around large commercial vehicles. So if a fleet installs a forward-facing camera that's triggered by some event, a hard brake or some other event, more often than not, that video footage is exonerating the truck driver who was doing what they were supposed to be doing, and it's the car driver who comes in and maneuvers unsafely around that vehicle.
That's actually a great example of the use of technology and the use of video and so forth to actually provide some truth in these kind of things, because everybody loves to blame the truck. I mean, it's a commercial vehicle. They must have a good liability policy, so let's ding them for what we can, even if it's the car's fault.
Absolutely. And so that's why fleets are really embracing the use of video, because large commercial vehicle involved with a car, more than likely, the car is going to suffer more damage, and it's going to be the truck driver's word against the car driver's word. You know, the use of the video really does save trucking companies, although there's an investment in cost in those video systems, does save the trucking company a lot of times in litigation, because if it is something the truck driver did incorrect, then they immediately have the evidence of that, and they can work that out. But more often than not, it shows what the truck driver says was true. I was doing what I was supposed to do, and a car left its lane or jumped right in front of me and slammed on their brakes, these unsafe driving behaviors.
And also to safe driving behavior around trucks. In our driver ed, putting our kids through driver ed, there wasn't much about that at all.
There really isn't, and that's a whole separate issue, sort of changing that paradigm at the state licensing agencies and driver's ed courses so that they teach students how to drive around trucks. And I have to applaud the American Trucking Associations. They've done a great job of really getting the word out about that.
What does the trucking industry mean for Georgia?
Trucking is a big deal in Georgia. This is a big trucking state. And in fact, 76% of the communities in Georgia are serviced exclusively by the trucking industry to get what they need. And so it is a big deal. We see a lot of trucks. Of course, I live here in Atlanta, and we're very familiar with trucks on the highway. But we have to remember, yes, we're stuck in traffic. Yes, there's a lot of congestion here in Atlanta. Yes, there are a lot of trucks. But we have to remember, all of those trucks are carrying the things you and I use every single day.
And I think that that's probably what most people don't appreciate, is that just what a driver it is to the economy to be able to transport goods effectively from one place to another. And that's a great statistic, that 76% of communities would just be without bread and milk if there wasn't for the trucking industry, never mind all the other goods that they use.
You know, I think we all too often as a public forget, you know, we're the ones who are driving all that demand for consumer goods. It's us who wants all that stuff. And so it has to be delivered somehow. We don't have railroad tracks pulling up to the back of our grocery store. All of that food has to go in on a truck.
So where are the major bottlenecks here in Atlanta, and what could we do about that potentially?
We've been studying bottlenecks at ATRI for a number of years using truck GPS data to figure out where trucks are not moving as efficiently as they should. Georgia is quite a familiar state on that list, and Atlanta has 6 of the top bottlenecks in the country.
Oof.
Of the top 100. And Spaghetti Junction, in fact, was number 1 for 3 years in a row until this year got moved down to number 2. It was replaced by Fort Lee, New Jersey, the George Washington Bridge that connects New York and New Jersey. But Spaghetti Junction and all around the perimeter, we have some of those top 100 bottlenecks.
How can we possibly solve these problems?
Building additional capacity may not be the solution. And that's where we have to look to things like how we operate the system and how we use technology. Certainly in the trucking industry, we do what we can to route our trucks through these bottlenecks at less congested times. A lot of that times that's driven by the customers, the shippers and receivers. But when we can, we'll route our trucks through these areas at less congested times. We use technology to tell us how to go. So when there's a traffic incident, we get notification and we move our trucks to different locations when we can. Every minute that truck driver sits stuck in traffic, it's not only chewing away at their available hours of service, how long they're able to drive, but it's wasting fuel, it's creating wear and tear on the vehicle, and there are a whole host of other impacts from that driver sitting stuck in traffic that we don't want to experience in the industry.
What is the next big thing on the horizon for the trucking industry?
Well, one of our biggest issues, and it really is a perennial issue, is our driver shortage. But it is becoming much more challenging for us as an industry. Right now, the estimates are that we're short about 60,000 drivers. Wow. But if we don't do something to deal with those who are retiring, we're going to face an even greater shortage. Estimates are it would top 100,000. And when we start to see shortages like that, Brian, goods don't get delivered. It drives up the price of transportation, so it drives up the price of goods. We've got to do something as an industry to bring more people in to drive trucks.
And that's Rebecca Brewster with the American Transportation Research Institute on Travel Safely with Brian Mulligan, presented by Applied Information. To hear the entire interview, visit businessradiox.com select the Gwinnett Studio, and then select Travel Safely. Coming up next, news about a 25-year reunion in the works for the unforgettable Atlanta Knights hockey team. This is North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. Welcome back to North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X. Back in the mid-1990s, an unforgettable cast of characters took Atlanta by storm. The Atlanta Knights routinely packed the old Omni Coliseum, and in 1994, the minor league hockey team not only won over the city, but won a league championship, earning a parade down Peachtree Street. This year marks the 25th anniversary of that 1994 championship, and on a recent episode of Gwinnett Business Radio, Craig Jenkins shared plans for an upcoming reunion and celebration. For those that may not have been in Atlanta in the 90s, tell us all about the Atlanta Knights and what a big deal they were back then.
Well, it's a story made for Hollywood, to be honest with you, in a city that hosted, obviously, the Braves, the Hawks, the Falcons. Hockey before that was in the form of the Atlanta Flames, and David Berkman, Charles Felix, Richard Adler, namely, took it upon themselves to purchase a International Hockey League team, which was the kind of AAA, I guess you would, affiliate of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Stuck it down here and in Atlanta in the Omni prior to the 96 Olympics. And we knew that we couldn't sell hockey in itself, but we sold a party and we sold an attitude and we sold entertainment. And fans just literally came out in droves.
Now Donatelli wants to go at it with Medill, who backs away from trouble, and Martel calls no penalty. Here comes San Diego the other way. Across and splitting the defense, a quick shot, save, rebound, and another save, and went wide as Lambert could not capitalize. A penalty coming up now as LaPuma and Lambert push and shove. Donatelli challenged Cummins, he went down. Cummins throwing punches. Oh, he's all over Miles O'Connor. A linesman is between Bawa and LaPuma. And Cummins has just blistered O'Connor with punches.
I don't know what our average attendance was, but it was well in excess of over 10,000 in the Omni, which for hockey held 14,777, if I'm not mistaken, give or take a couple of bodies. So anyway, it was really just kind of one of those things that ended up taking Atlanta by storm, yeah. And we ended up outdrawing the Hawks for, I don't know, 2-3 years in a row we outdrew the Hawks.
And it all came together in 1994 with a Turner Cup championship.
That's correct. Yeah, it was a glorious moment in the Omni, 14,000-plus sold-out capacity crowd Omni. We were playing the Fort Wayne Comets.
20 seconds to go. Cummins rolled it ahead. Here's an empty net opportunity for the Knights. They shot it wide. Now another chance goes wide as Tanguay had an opportunity. But it won't make any difference. They count it down in Atlanta. Four, three, two, the 1994 IHL Turner Cup champion Atlanta Knights are mobbing one another here on home ice.
And you were part of that organization as well, and you knew not many people gave us a chance from the get-go. It was minor league. This is a major league city. You know, hockey's not going to fly in the South. And I said, you guys haven't seen the product. You haven't experienced it. And it was on par with the National Hockey League in many, many, many ways, including talent. But really the ironic thing was we may have been minor league in name, but we were major league in every other component, from front office to management. It was done and done very, very well, and we were kind of the icon of the International League that year and for other years to come.
The players became celebrities. The captain was Stan Julia. Chris LaPuma was a fan favorite. He was the guy getting into fights all the time. And there was actually a parade down Peachtree Street after they won the championship. But here we are in 2019, 25 years later. It's the 25th year anniversary of the championship. Tell us what's going on. You're putting together a big thing in conjunction with the Atlanta Gladiators hockey team.
Well, it's weird how it got started. I had a couple of friends of mine that obviously worked with us. And they had called and said, man, if anybody can put this thing together, you can. Let's do this. We've got to do it. I said, I don't even know where to start. So fast forward, the parade happens 25 years later. I spoke with the Gladiators. Their opening weekend is that weekend. They play on the Friday and Saturday night that we'll be in town. The actual dates are October 18th and 19th. 18 is the Friday preceding. The 19th is the Gladiator game at which we will be. And then 20th, of course, is, you know, people will start making their way back to their homes. There's a lot of guys working in the National Hockey League now, that sort of thing. So it's going to be a huge weekend. The response from the fans has been overwhelmingly positive.
People still remember the Atlanta Knights. And when you went to Thrasher games, you go to Gladiator games now, you still see people wearing Knights jerseys.
Yeah, it's a phenomenon. I know you would probably agree. It was some of the most fun times you ever had in your professional career, was being around that group of guys, both on the ice and off the ice. The camaraderie we had in the front office, and the players were more receptive to doing whatever we wanted them or asked them to do. It was just the perfect storm. I hate using that analogy, but that's really what it was. And the fans, once we started kind of leaking this out, is this something that you guys would even want to do? The fans went nuts. Now we're happy that we're going to be able to give them some details on when they can come back and share those memories. A lot of people, including the ex-players, will call me and say, well, who all's coming? And I said, it would be easier for me to say who's not coming than who is coming, because right now I only know of two guys off of that team
right. That
aren't going to be here.
Just about the entire team is going to be there. So that's the cool thing. So for the fans that remember the Atlanta Knights and remember the fondness of those days, the Gladiators game that Saturday night, I understand the Gladiators are going to be wearing Atlanta Knights jerseys during the warm-ups.
That's correct. There's
going to be, what else is going on? You told me the other day there's going to be an autograph session with the players.
We're still working on it. That's why I'm in Atlanta right now. They have planned, beginning at 6 p.m. when the doors open to the arena, they're going to have the players seated at tables with their names, of course. You'll be able to go up, get autographs. You'll be able to go up, get pictures made, share stories, bring your old memorabilia.
Bring your old Knights jersey, yep. Your old photos, your old yearbooks and programs.
And from that roster in the 94 season, each player will be represented in the form of a warm-up jersey that the Gladiators will wear in their pregame warm-up. And then afterwards, they will auction those jerseys off, and the proceeds all go to charity. You can get your tickets, call the Gladiators, get in touch with them, because they already know where we'll be sitting. You could sit with us during the game. The players who have called me, hey, can I bring my wife? Can I bring my kid? And I said, absolutely, because when these children, 25 years ago,
many did not exist.
They may not, or mom was carrying them around in a stroller in one of those baby carriage things, right. You know. They didn't have a clue what was going on.
They didn't
around.
Know how popular, how big their dad was.
And so now they're going to see their dad and go, why would anybody want my dad's autograph? They're going to get to see it firsthand, so we're sure the players are going to get a kick out of that.
Let's go down memory lane real quick, Craig, for those that were big fans of the Atlanta Knights back in the day. List as many players as you can that you know have already committed to coming.
Okay.
I already mentioned Stan Drulia.
Stan Drulia, Chris LaPuma. Jason Ruff.
Christian Campo
is coming. Corey Cross is coming. Head coach John Paris will be there. Assistant coach Joe Bacchino, along with the legend himself, Gene Ubriaco, who was the coach the year previous. In fact, that was an interesting conversation that I had with John Paris. When I said, coach, I don't want to be disrespectful, would you have an issue if Gene Ubriaco were at the reunion?
Because didn't Ubriaco, wasn't he the head coach at the beginning of the year?
I think so.
And then he was called up in the middle of the year.
Right.
Once they called up Ubriaco, it was John Paris that they went ahead and just named him the head coach. And he came in maybe three quarters of the way through the season and finished it out and, of course, was there for the playoffs.
And he tells me, when I ask him about Ubi, he said, Craig, not only do I want him there, He said, you tell Ubi that I want him sitting right next to me at everything we do, because he left me with one heck of a hockey team. Brent Gretzky is coming. Sean Rivers, Jeff Buchanan, Jeff Medill, Devin Edgerton, Bill McDougal, Eric Charron. That's pretty much everybody right there.
25-year anniversary of the Turner Cup Championship Atlanta Knights, a celebration going on in Atlanta, and it's really going to peak at the Atlanta Gladiators game Saturday, October
19th.
If you want to know more and get details, check out the Atlanta Gladiators website. But the date, one final time, for the big Atlanta Knights celebration at the Gladiators game at the Infinite Energy Center is Saturday, October 19th.
That's correct.
And that's a segment from the weekly show Gwinnett Business Radio. If you want to hear the entire interview, visit businessradiox.com, click on the Gwinnett Studio, and then select Gwinnett Business Radio. Well, that's it for now. Business Radio X lets you hear from the top business leaders, executives, managers, and business owners in our area. Today's interviews are just a few of thousands that you can hear anytime 24/7 by visiting the voice of business, businessradiox.com. I'm Mike Salmond, and this has been North Georgia Business Radio and the best of Business Radio X.